Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Sunday, July 12th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me doing a Sunday podcast because I took Friday off, so I wanted to make sure I got this in. And just simply following up as to what I would have talked about on Friday had I done a podcast. So the title of today's podcast is Final Notice Evictions. I'm going to read a short article from CNBC. There's multiple articles out there that have been released over the past few days in regards to this very topic. This is no surprise to this audience because we have been discussing this very issue here for months, well before COVID-19. One of our main podcast topics last week was about the real estate market, reminding this audience for the umpteenth time that this is going to be a top-down, bottom-up squeeze or collapse or whatever word you want to use when it comes to the real estate market this time around. And we went through those scenarios. We went through all of the bankruptcies in regards to commercial real estate, which I'm considering the top end of the market, in addition to high-end real estate, which will also be collapsing in the not-too-distant future, if my analysis is correct. And then with all of the massive amounts of layoffs and permanent job losses, people on the lower end of the income scale who happens to be in a home or is paying rent in an apartment or in a house, it's not going to be able to make those payments anymore. And so you're going to see downward pressure on those prices, housing prices as well. And people, unfortunately, likely to get evicted. Because it's not as if you go into a pandemic situation as which we are in right now, and you just stop all the presses. I know there is this stereotype that exists out there in a lot of people's minds that landlords are just greedy, capitalistic villains. That's not the case. They're not swimming around in cash. They're not sleeping on beds of gold like Uncle Scrooge McDuck. That's not what's taking place. There's a lot of middle-class Americans who own properties to rent them out as an extra stream of cash flow to set them up for their retirement. Buy a house, pay it off 15, 30 years, and then reap the benefits at the end of the day. Just collect those rent payments. And we use the example of college towns last week. Well, if colleges don't open up, universities don't go back this fall semester, well, then there's no need to rent out any of those apartments or any of those homes to college students. But guess what? Guess what? Those landlords still have to make that mortgage payment. How are they going to be able to do it if they're not Uncle Scrooge McDuck? So this cuts both ways, and this is why evictions are likely going to happen, because the landlords have to pay off the mortgage, and if they're not receiving cash flow, then they can't pay off the mortgage. If they can't pay the mortgage, then guess what's going to happen? The bank's going to come after the landlord, and then you're going to have a redo of the great financial crisis, maybe even worse, as some experts are anticipating, and I would not be surprised. First, to the futures market right now, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up about 0.6%, as is the S&P 500. The NASDAQ 100 is up 0.75%. The Japanese cash trade right now is up about 1 percentage point. And the Australian cash trade is up about 0.7%, as are the Chinese markets. This is evidently off of the back of another vaccine or COVID-19 therapy headline from Gilead Sciences. This is the same company that did this a couple months ago, announcing that, oh, the treatment, everything looks to be good for remdesivir. And then, of course, a day or two later, everybody sort of really read the whole memo. They really read the research, and they said, oh, that's just not the case. That's just not the case. The sample size was extremely small. It was hopeful, but no cigar. Now, we'll see if this is the same song and dance. I wouldn't be surprised because we live in a headline-driven world. We were lied to for over a year with the China trade deal, only to get a phase one trade deal, which amounted to nothing. Maybe, a big maybe, of getting us back to where we were before we even started that trade war nonsense. And now nothing's going on because we're basically in a cold war with China. And now you have the president himself even admitting that phase two is pretty much off the table because of how upset he is with China, because of COVID-19, how they handled it. Maybe they're responsible for it. You know the drill. Of course, we're only a few months away from the presidential election, so why throw that into the mix? But we'll see what happens. On the commodity front, we have oil and natural gas all in the red. Crude oil WTI is at $40.13, a barrel Brent at $42.80, natural gas at $1.78. Gold and silver both up. Spot prices, gold, $1,803 an ounce. Silver is trading at $18.88 per ounce. Again, these are the spot prices. If you're looking at the futures, silver is once again north of $19. And just because we missed it on Friday, Uncle Sam's 10-year Treasury junk note is yielding spot 6.4%. So something to keep your eye out on because the bond market, as I always like to say here, as do many others who understand the difference between the bond market and the stock market, the bond market's usually right. And the bond market is not pricing in any type of massive V-shaped recovery. Not at all. Not even close. So we're going to wait and see, because that's all we can do. But from a technical standpoint, when you're looking at the charts, something's about to break out one way or the other when it comes to these yields and what the bond market is anticipating. I'm not going to be surprised if yields go even lower, and if they go lower, then they may bring the stock market with it. Despite the massive amount of money printing that is taking place, it's only so much they can do for so long. But they've pulled many, many rabbits out of this hat, this monetary magical hat that they seem to have, so time will tell. That's why I say stay diversified. A couple other stories before we get to the eviction article from CNBC. On Friday, President Trump commuted the sentence of his longtime friend and political advisor, Roger Stone. This is par for the course, ladies and gentlemen. This should come as no surprise. Now, there's obviously a lot of hysteria that Donald Trump did this, and maybe that's justified, maybe rightly so. But again, this is par for the course. Why don't you go look up at the list of names of people who were pardoned or had their sentences commuted by President Clinton or George W. Bush or President Obama? I mean, we can play this game all day long. I'm not even going to bore you with it. I'm just saying this in passing because if you're watching CNN or MSNBC, they're going ballistic. Well, again, we could make a whole week going through the past presidents and who they pardoned and whose sentences they commuted. This is par for the course. It's not right. It's not justified. But this is the world we live in. The other thing that I want this audience to understand, and I hope I do a good job of doing this, is trying to get you guys to focus on the big issues. Because the media, the politicians, the Democrats and the Republicans, they want you divided. They want you paying attention to trivial topics. They don't want you focusing on the meat and potatoes. They want you to focus on the appetizer. They want you to focus on the dessert. They want you to focus on the atmosphere. Was it too cold in here? Was it too hot? Did the waiter or waitress give you a bad look? That's irrelevant. Pay attention to the best of your ability to the steak and potatoes on the plate. Because this is mass hysteria. You got the media, all stations, talking about Goya beans, right? And then you have the argument with wearing a mask, not wearing a mask. Then you have the arguments of these inanimate objects that are upsetting people. You know, the statues and the monuments. These are distractions. Because no matter what happens, no matter what side of this quote-unquote debate you're on, whether you should wear a mask, not wear a mask, whether it's government infringement, whether it's tyranny, I mean, come on. whether you can eat a bean, not eat a bean, whether these statues should stand, whether they should be taken down. Come on, no matter what side of it you're on, guess what's still in existence after the fact? Government's still taxing you to death. Federal Reserve's still stealing your wealth through inflation. Nobody seems to talk about these things. That's the steak and potatoes that you have to pay attention to. They don't want you paying attention to that because that would start solving problems if we structurally change them. If we abolish the Fed, if we abolish the income tax. I don't like the fact that we're in a pandemic. I don't like the fact that we have governors and mayors and all these other people thinking they're dictator, that they're Caesar for a day. I don't like it at all. But you have to pick your battles. I don't like people going after monuments and defacing them and burning them down and tearing them down. But if I have to pick a battle, I'm going after the steak and potatoes. I'm staying focused on the real cause of so much that ails us. I'm not going to be distracted just because somebody with a nice hairdo and a nice suit on TV and somebody who I like on TV starts talking about Goya beans and masks and statues. Why don't these nice, smart people on TV talk about the issues that we talk about here? Huh? You ever wonder that? It's because they don't want you knowing. There's only 5 or 6 media companies, ladies and gentlemen, that exist out there that are responsible for the vast majority of all quote-unquote news that is put out there. That's it. And is it any wonder that when you flip through all of the stations, and I hope that you do, is it any wonder they're all talking about the same stories? 7-8 billion people on this planet. Got news cycles, 24/7 news, and they all talk about the same 3 or 4 stories all day long. How can that be? How can that be? It's because it's by design. They don't want you focused on the root cause of these issues. They want you focused on beans and masks and inanimate objects. And unfortunately, sadly, tragically, millions upon millions of Americans fall for it. And that's why you're going to be scratching your head in another 4 years, another 8 years, 12, 16 years. My goodness, I don't understand why it's the same argument, why it's the same problem over and over and over again. We do history lessons here at the Capitol News. I like to put my arguments, my analysis in the context of history. We went back all the way to the Great Depression. I talk about books that I read that were written in the 1970s that read as if they were written today. All you got to do is change the numbers. You just got to make them a little bit bigger. That's it. Same problems, same structural issues, because nobody goes after the structural issues. It's all about the noise. It's all about the distraction. Well, I'm a Democrat and I think this, and I'm a Republican and I think that. And round we go. Now it's a $26, $27 trillion national debt, a $4 trillion deficit this year alone, and it'll be higher. And what's going to happen next year? Because they're already talking about tacking on another $2 trillion before they go back on recess come August. Another $2 trillion that we don't have. We're just going to print it to bail out the states, to bail out pension plans, to bail out cities. And then what else? Are they going to extend that extra $600 a week if you're unemployed? Are they going to give you a bonus to go back to work? I mean, what else are they going to do? And we've done the math just at the $3 trillion level. And it's much more than that, but just at the $3 trillion level that they borrowed for the second quarter alone, which is nearly representative of 100% of tax revenue, total tax revenue, that the federal government brings in by all means. A whole year's worth borrowed just in the second quarter of this year alone. With what to show for it? Absolutely nothing. But we're all going to pay for it. We're all going to pay for it. Inflation, stagflation, perhaps hyperinflation. Higher costs of living, lower standards of living, fewer opportunities. The writing's on the wall. There is no free lunch. And if they have magically pulled out another monetary rabbit out of the magical monetary hat, then we don't have to pay taxes anymore. We don't have to pay our bills anymore because they can just print it. There's no cost. There's no consequence. They've discovered the free lunch. And if it's free for them, then it's free for us too. That's how that works, because they're supposed to work for us, not the other way around. No, I don't think that's true. I don't think they did discover free lunch. I'm just saying, if that's the argument they want to push on us, that there are no consequences to this, that there are no costs to it whatsoever, then if it's good for them, it's good for us. Don't pay your taxes. Don't pay your bills. Send them to the Federal Reserve. Send them to Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Mitch McConnell. Send them to Trump. Send them to Mnuchin. Let them pay it. Please stay focused on the big structural issues. They want you divided. No matter how big the distraction, no matter how big the branch in front of you, it's the root that you have to strike at. Looming evictions may soon make 28 million homeless in U.S., expert says. The coronavirus pandemic could result in some 28 million Americans being evicted, according to one expert. By comparison, 10 million people lost their homes during the Great Recession. Here's what we can expect from this crisis. Emily Benfer began her career representing homeless families in Washington, D.C. Her first case involved a family that had been evicted after complaining to their landlord about the holes in their roof. One of the times she met with the family, one of the children, a four-year-old girl, asked her, "Are you really going to help us?" Benfer struggled with how to answer the question. "I'd met them too late," she said. "I couldn't stop the eviction. They had already been sleeping on the subway and in other people's homes, and you could see the effects it was taking on them." Today, Benfer is a leading expert on evictions. She is the chair of the American Bar Association's Task Force Committee on Eviction and co-creator of the COVID-19 Housing Policy Scorecard with the Eviction Lab at Princeton University. Throughout the public health crisis, Benfer has been investigating how states are dealing with evictions and sharing what she finds in a public database. CNB spoke with Benfer about the coming eviction crisis and what can be done to turn it around. The interview has been condensed and edited for clarity. Question: how does the eviction crisis brought on by the pandemic compare with the 2008 housing crisis? We have never seen this extent of eviction in such a truncated amount of time in our history. We can expect this to increase dramatically in the coming weeks and months, especially as the limited support and intervention measures that are in place start to expire. About 10 million people over a period of years were displaced from their homes following the foreclosure crisis in 2008. We're looking at 20 to 28 million people in this moment between now and September facing eviction. Allow me to repeat. We're looking at 20 million to 28 million people in this moment between now and September facing eviction. Question: you study the intersection of housing and health. What will all these evictions mean for people's health during the pandemic? Eviction negatively impacts the trajectory of an individual's life, and it can do that in a permanent way. Studies have demonstrated that eviction causes increased mortality and causes respiratory distress, which in the COVID-19 pandemic can put people in an ever greater peril. It results in depression, suicides, and other poor health outcomes. And the primary response to COVID-19 has been to shelter in place. If there's an increase in homelessness, and one economist estimates homelessness could rise by more than 40% this year alone, that could spread the virus as well. Question: you've been keeping track of what states are doing to protect tenants, mostly through eviction moratoriums. How do you feel the efforts have fallen short? Some of the moratoriums are limited to different segments of the population and in their duration. They were also not coupled with financial assistance to ensure that renters don't accrue this backed-up debt and are stabilized enough to stay in their unit. Another issue is that in some states, landlords were allowed to go forward with a hearing on eviction and even receive an order of eviction and it was only forestalled at the execution stage. That means that there are a number of evictions that are just waiting for the sheriffs to execute. The moment the moratoriums lift, all of those families will be immediately put out. And right now, 29 states lack any state-level moratorium against evictions. Question. Because of the pandemic, a lot of these evictions are unfolding over video or phone instead of in a courtroom. What are the issues that come up here? Even prior to the pandemic, the system was very challenging for tenants to navigate and to raise their rights. 90% of tenants across the country are unrepresented. When you consider that people are now choosing between rent and food for their families, they're also unlikely to be able to pay for minutes on their phone or Wi-Fi to log into a remote hearing. So appearance itself may be very challenging. And if they fail to appear, if they weren't able to dial in, or if they don't have the right link to the Zoom presentation, that's considered a failure to appear, which results in a default judgment for the property owner. Question, what can be done to make this eviction crisis less devastating? As an immediate measure, we need a nationwide uniform moratorium on eviction. And it has to be coupled with financial assistance to ensure that the renter can stay housed without shifting the debt burden onto the property owner. The owners that are the most likely to be affected by the eviction crisis now, right now, are those who have small properties and don't have the financial cushion to make ends meet over a period of months when they're not receiving that rent. Once that's in place, we really need to start addressing the root causes of the eviction crisis and the lack of affordable housing. Well, maybe she should start listening to the Capital News, because I don't know where she thinks all this funny money is going to come up to bail out all these people either. 20 to 28 million Americans, if she and others are correct, could be facing eviction. That's a travesty. That's a national tragedy. Where are these people going to go? We talked last week about the movement from people getting out of big cities into the suburbs. Well, if this is en masse and people are really leaving the cities because they can't afford it, they're afraid of the social interactions with all of those people, okay, those prices in these major cities are going to plummet. And because of short supply in suburbs, those housing prices are going to take off. So if they're trying to escape higher prices in the city, you got low supply in the suburbs, and you got huge demand, well, you've just bid up those prices drastically. So the idea of escaping high prices, you're just walking right into it. Not a pretty picture. 20 to 28 million Americans. As of last week, we have 32.9 million Americans collecting some form of unemployment insurance. 32.9 million. And that was before a lot of these states started to see a massive increase in their COVID-19 counts and stopped their reopenings or slowed them down or moved them from phase two back to phase one, what have you, depending on the situation. So the numbers that are going to come out over the next couple of weeks, I think, are going to be very troubling. 32.9 million collecting some sort of unemployment insurance. 20 to 28 million could be evicted. According to this expert, according to this article, not over the course of years, but over the course of the coming months, where are they going to go? But then, this is a tale of two cities. This is a tale of two cities. So many of these people are likely going to get kicked out of their homes or their apartments. Even if you said it was half, 25%, 10%, you are still talking about a huge number. Tale of two cities. The average American is going to get kicked out of his or her home or their apartment. Maybe even the landlords are going to lose their property, end up in foreclosure, because they have no tenant who can pay the rent. Yet on the other side of the street, you got the Federal Reserve printing money to buy corporate bonds from some of the largest corporations in the world. How is that helping these people who are going to be kicked out of their apartments or their homes? How does this make any sense? But they're doing it nonetheless, and they will tell you with a straight face, looking you square in the eye, that somehow, buying all of these corporate bonds from the largest corporations in the world is good for the United States of America, and it's good for the average American. Kiss my you-know-what. This is ridiculous. And we're all paying for it too, by the way. Even the people who are going to be evicted. That is one of the costs. This isn't just all monetary, ladies and gentlemen, and I hope you understand that when I talk about these things, that it's not just about dollars. It's the real impact this has on people. And that's really the big reason why I get so jazzed up and fired up with this stuff. Because this is real. The funny money might be made up, but people getting kicked out of their homes, children living in cars with their parents, that's real. People committing suicide because they've lost their jobs, they've lost their homes, that's real. That's a real cost to these people, to these families, to these communities. And these jokers in Washington, D.C. think, well, if I just buy some bonds, everything's going to be okay. Tell that to these people who are going to end up depressed, killing themselves, God forbid, but it's going to happen. Losing their jobs, losing their business. You can bail them out with the drop of a hat. Billions, trillions of dollars printed. No questions asked. But Main Street relief, oh no, there has to be bickering between the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department as opposed to how all of this is going to get rolled out. Meanwhile, small businesses closed for good ain't coming back. Ain't coming back. Could have bailed them out. I'm not saying they should have bailed them out. I don't like these bailouts for anybody. This audience knows this. But if you're going to give it to Apple and Amazon and Ford and even foreign companies, Toyota, Volkswagen, BMW, I don't care if it's on the primary market or secondary market, the same point still exists. If you're going to give it to them, then give it to Main Street. But they don't, because they're picking the winners and losers. There's no draining of the swamp. Don't you get it? Don't you get it? They're alive and well. This is a joke. And you're paying for it. And this country is going to be paying for it for years. The inflation, it doesn't understand borders. It doesn't carry a passport around with it. It's already making its way around the world. Over the week, there's other countries we can now add to the list who are protesting their governments. Bulgaria, Serbia. People are sick and tired of being sick and tired. And another sign and symptom of our downfall here in this country is the fact that the stock market just keeps going up. And a lot of people don't even care. Why? Because, well, if they have stock, well, I'm making money, they're going up. I don't care if it's because people are going to be losing their homes, if they're going to get sick, if they're going to become depressed, if they're going to kill themselves. I don't care if they got to go to a food bank. I don't care if somebody in another country has to walk a dirt road for 4 or 5 miles waiting in line to get any type of food because of the policies we are enacting and implementing. I don't care. Tesla's up. Apple's up. When we don't care about our humanity, that's it. Country's over. This experiment's done. It's finished. Because we've made everything about the dollar, the almighty dollar. And we're printing it like it's going out of style because it is. People in this country around the world have to wake up, and a lot of them are. And again, and I'll say it here, the only leaders on this planet are the people taking to the streets, demanding true change from their governments. The ones that are hitting it on the head, that understand that it's their central banks, that it's their federal governments that have been inadequate, that have been corrupt. They get it. And they can take no more. They can't take a 5% price increase on a subway or another quarter added to the price of gasoline or diesel. It's the final straw that broke the camel's back. And it's happening one country after the next. The dominoes are up and they are falling. They were falling before COVID-19. It's even worse now. There is no V-shaped recovery. There is not going to be a V-shaped recovery. There cannot be a V-shaped recovery because this is all debt and funny money. That's not real. But it's got to be paid back. Principal plus interest. That's debt. It steals from the future. So how can the future be bright if we're stealing from it? These are simple concepts. But that's what I'm saying. I'll throw my hands up and say, okay, they solved it. All they got to do is print money. Well, then nobody even's got to go to work anymore. They'll just print the money. You don't even need production. You don't even need the capital. Just print it. No more taxes. Don't pay your bills. Do what you want. Tell the Fed to pay for it because there's no negative side effects to it. Final notice, evictions. Pay attention. They're coming. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.